Hour number two of overtime here on a Saturday, right here on 106.7 The Fan. Toby Altizer taking you up until Capitals hockey at 6:45. The Commanders will take on the Carolina Panthers tomorrow at Northwest Stadium. We'll get the lowdown on the Carolina Panthers. Let's go out to the BetQL guest hotline and bring in Alex Zetlow from the Charlotte Observer. Alex, what's going on, dude?
Hey, I'm doing great. I just touched down in Washington, or in D.C. I don't know how the locals call it, and I'm feeling good.
Lovely.
Thanks for having me on.
Your first time in D.C., or you've been here plenty?
I have been here before, but I am far from a local.
All right. Sounds good. So curious about this game tomorrow. Washington's flying high, even coming off of a loss. I think the vibes around this football team are pretty good overall. What's the vibe around Carolina like right now?
Yeah, it is a compelling question. So if you were to ask me this after week one or week two of this season, it would be the vibes are not good. The vibes are in wildly dire straits because all off season, the idea was that if the Panthers surround Bryce Young, their quarterback that they took number one overall in the 2023 draft, if they surround him with talent, if they go out and get a head coach and Dave Canales, who is known as the sort of quarterback whisperer of sorts, who has rejuvenated the careers of Geno Smith in Seattle and Baker Mayfield in Tampa Bay. If they could just do all that, then Bryce will be good and this offense will look a lot better than the one that was bereft of life in 2023. And so they did all that, and they did that at the expense of the defense a little bit. And even then, after 2 weeks, the offense still wasn't looking good. And the defense had actually regressed a little bit because of the transactions they made in the offseason. However, Andy Dalton steps in week three against in Las Vegas and has a remarkable day. And then the week after, even in a loss to the Bengals, there was life. There was joy in the locker room. There was like a sense of, okay, the spirit is good. That hot start from Andy has kind of cooled off the past 2 weeks, but I would still say that among people in the locker room, among the coaching staff, and I think among the fan base as well, it is good. The vibes are not as great as they were after Las Vegas, obviously, but the vibes are good. There's a sense that the Panthers can score 20 points and say a turnover here, a big explosive play there. They're in games now, which was not the case after week two.
Yeah, so I'm curious because I was going to ask you if it was the right move to bench Bryce after week two, but it sounds like that was the case, and it sounds like, you know, you brought in Canales and all these things to fix it. It's not going to happen for Bryce, at least right now. So that was clearly the correct move for this team because of, like you said, the vibes before were really bad, but benching him is kind of turned them around a little bit. Is that what I'm getting?
Well, it is a difficult call, and these are difficult questions that this coaching staff is asking them right now. What do they do with Bryce Young? I mean, it is replete with evidence out there that Bryce Young is a dazzling quarterback and has these remarkable processing skills and remarkable creative skills that he showed that in Alabama, and he showed that throughout the whole draft process and being evaluated and stuff like this. The issue is that he was a quarterback who was playing without any confidence at the NFL level. There are a whole bunch of theories as to how he got to that point, but that's kind of what it is right now. And so, to answer your question, in my view, and I think in a lot of people's views who are beat writers, who are on the ground floor every day, not the people who kind of casually know the Panthers and then see this breaking news that Bryce Young is getting benched and then kind of like toss a whole bunch of theories and then, you know, say things like this. It was the right move when it comes to making this team tolerable to watch in the present. However, this is still a guy that they spent a number one overall draft pick on. This is like a lot of their future is tied up in Bryce Young still. And I don't get the sense that they have completely moved on from him. I think that there could be some opportunity. And again, this is not like reporting necessarily. This is just Alex using his deductive reasoning. I think there is opportunity perhaps later this season for Bryce to get another shot at that QB1 spot. And now that he's had time to learn, after he's had some substantial time to learn from Andy, the offense got to see, okay, this is our vision come to life. Bryce, this is how you can propel us forward. I do think that's a possibility, but for right now, Andy is quarterback one. Dave Canales has said that time and time again, and Alex Zettler thinks that's the right move.
Talking with Alex Zettler from the Charlotte Observer, you mentioned like the kind of a plan there for Bryce Young, but Chuba Hubbard this year has been really impressive, and I really liked him coming out of Oklahoma State. He'd been okay as a back, but it seems like he's having a bit of a breakout season this year. What's allowed that to happen?
Oh my gosh, he's running his rear end off. He's playing fantastic ball. There are a couple things that go into that. One, part of this process of upgrading the offense has been really beefing up the offensive line. The Panthers went out and really upgraded their offensive line in a number of ways, really in the interior line position. So they go out and get Robert Hunt from Miami, and Robert is a right guard, and he was one of the highest profile offensive linemen, free agents out there this past offseason. So they go out and get him. They also go out to Seattle and get this guy in Damian Lewis, who has just proven to be a monster on that left guard position. They moved their left guard in Austin Corbett to the center spot, and Austin like has also played really well this year. He did go down 2 weeks ago with a season-ending bicep injury, so that's not good. But his replacement, Brady Christensen, has played well in his stead. So the interior offensive line is really good. The other thing that is important to know is that Chuba, well, on top of the fact that he's healthy for the first time in his career, he's also on a contract year. And he is – I don't have the stats directly in front of me, but he is getting the ball a ton. And when he's getting that ball, he is like – he's maximizing his opportunities, obviously. But in a contract year, it is not atypical for coaches to just absolutely wear their running backs out, particularly sure. if they're good, particularly if they're making the most of those opportunities, as Chuba is doing. And he's also proven he can catch the ball. I mean, I say this all the time. If I understand the weariness of putting any Carolina Panther on your fantasy football team, I get it. It's kind of been the modus operandi for, you know, the past couple seasons, but I would really consider putting Chuba in your starting lineup because he gets the ball a lot, and two, he makes the most of those opportunities.
Yeah, he's been really impressive this year. Let's go to the other side of the ball, talking with Alex Zettler from the Charlotte Observer. J.C. Horn is someone that has played really well. He's dealt with some injuries in his career, a high draft pick, and you know, there's been talks about the contract extension. You correct me if I'm wrong there, some of the stuff there. But also I've seen him kind of linked to various teams as a potential trade target. You know, various small publications here have said maybe you could trade for J.C. Horn if you're the Commanders down the line. What are the chances that he would get dealt, and what do you think it would cost if a team wanted to trade for him?
Yeah, and this is just in conversations with coaching staff and then just also other people in the building, I don't think it's a priority for the Panthers to look to trade J.C. Horn, purely because he is obviously he's a draft pick, and he was a 2021 draft pick. Before this season, they picked up the club option on him, so he has a contract guaranteed through not the end of this season but the end of next season. And also, J.C. hasn't proven like his fullest of full potential yet, and he's still been really good for the Panthers. And the reason I say that is because he's battled so many injuries, as you alluded to. So, and I think it's also important to note that Panthers don't have a ton of playmakers on defense right now. After trading away Brian Burns last year, after seeing Frankie Louvu walk to the Commanders last year, and yeah. Frankie's having a fantastic year for y'all, I think that it's going to be a priority to hold on to their playmakers and actually build on defense, whether that be through the draft or whether that be through, you know, trying to get a veteran in this next free agency or even later this season. I don't see that as a trade possibility. Now, what I do possibly see is like some trade capital the Panthers could work with is maybe a playmaker on offense who teams see and say, hey, we can use them immediately. They can plug in and go in. Again, this is not me reporting anything, but I mean, I think a guy like Adam Thielen would make sense. I think a guy who's a veteran wide receiver, I think a guy like maybe Jonathan Mingo would make sense. He's a second round draft pick last year, but he is, and he has shown a lot of potential. But again, this is just Alex Zettler speaking, but people in the building are good on J.C. Horn. They like him here. They want to keep him here. And I haven't, and these trade rumors are not something that is coming from beat writers. These are just people kind of speculating as is like normal for this time of year, but that's kind of people from the outside looking at it.
Yeah, absolutely. Talking with Alex Zettler from the Charlotte Observer, taking a look at tomorrow's game, what is the avenue to victory for the Carolina Panthers, or is there? I feel like any given Sunday, like we understand that, but you know, I feel like the Commanders have played fairly well in just about every game this season. You know, they had a chance for a letdown game against Cleveland a couple weeks ago, and they came out and just whooped up on Cleveland. So I feel pretty confident they're going to come out and play. But what are the chances, and what's the avenue for Carolina to come into D.C. and get a win tomorrow?
Is it possible that Jaden Daniels could look like a rookie quarterback? I mean, if that's a possibility, then I'm sure the Panthers would take it. The path to victory is difficult. The Panthers defense, on top of already not having a ton of playmakers, are super beat up right now. Their injury report list this past week is like a CVS receipt.
And it's very long.
Speaking
of which, real quick, is Deontay Johnson going to suit up and play?
He's still listed as questionable. That's the official word.
Okay.
Yes. But he has three things now on his injury report. He's got the ankle, which he's been nursing all week and really been nursing all season, even though he hasn't missed a game. But then they also added a rib and a hamstring to his injury report. It seems like he's kind of bruised up at the moment. But yes, he is still officially questionable. But when we talk about path to victory, I mean, defense is super beat up. They already lost a whole bunch of leaders earlier this season. They lost Derek Brown, their only Pro Bowler last year. They lost week one. They lost their captain, side linebacker, and Shaq Thompson after week two. And they had a whole bunch of guys that they acquired in free agency start the year on the injured reserve list and haven't been activated back yet. So this defense is in not good shape, and going against the Commanders, who have a top five offense in the NFL in pretty much every major offensive statistical category, doesn't spell optimism for them. Let's just say that.
Yeah, absolutely. Last question for you. I got to ask this on a personal note. How fun is it to cover Xavier Leggett? Every single time I see a video of this guy, he seems like he's smiling. He seems fun to talk to, and his accent is unique, to say the least. I don't know that I've heard a thick accent like that very often. So what's it like covering him?
Oh my gosh, he's wonderful to cover. He's the first time that he walked into the room, because obviously the Panthers drafted him in the first round, and so like they had this party for him and they had this press conference for him. They drove him in because he's only down the road from Mullen, South Carolina. They drive him in, and he walks into this press room filled with reporters, and he takes the time to shake everyone's hand.
Wow.
While he first arrives there. He shakes every media member's hand there, and then he goes on to answer a whole bunch of different questions about what he can bring to the team, what's the name of his horse, which is Dollar Bill, by the way, because he loves to ride horses. His uncle got him into riding horses. That like everyone seemed to be obsessed with the ease and the like joy that he talks with, just like that Southern elocution. I mean, just like everything about him is like, it has been a joy to cover so far. And on top of that, he's starting to make plays on the field, which is something that brings a smile to Dave Canales' face. So,
yeah. Absolutely. Alex, I mean, it's cool. I mean, I'm from an observer from afar, just seeing all the videos of him and seeing all the different things. I was just curious because he seems like a joy, and it's good to hear that he, I mean, sounds like he's even better than what it looks like in the videos, and he looks like one of the best. So, Alex, appreciate the time, man, and enjoy your stay in D.C., and tomorrow should be a fun one.
Yep, absolutely. Thanks so much.
There you heard from Alex Zetlow from the Charlotte Observer. He joined us on the BetQL guest hotline. Sports betting has come to Maryland. Don't place that first bet without checking with BetQL. BetQL analyzes every game to find you the most profitable betting opportunities. Get 3 free days of BetQL access by downloading the BetQL app or visiting BetQL.com. Speaking of high-character wide receivers that we love to hear from, Terry McLaurin was talking at the locker room the other day. J.P. Finley got some audio that was interesting, talking about his second touchdown. Remember, the fourth and goal touchdown that he scored in Baltimore, second touchdown of the game. Some interesting insight from number 17, Terry McLaurin. We'll hear it next here on The Fan. Welcome back. Overtime on The Fan. Toby Altizer taking you up until Caps hockey tonight at 6:45 as they take on the Devils, looking for their third straight victory. Let's get back to some football talk for the Burgundy and Gold. So, the other day, J.P. Finley, our own from B. Mitch and Finley, 10 to 2 weekdays here on The Fan, grabbed some audio from Terry talking at his locker, and he was talking about the second touchdown he had in Baltimore. You remember it was the back shoulder fade sort of throw. Should have been pass interference if it wasn't caught, but there was never going to be a flag for that, apparently. Jaden threw a really good ball over there. But something really interesting on the inside of that, Terry McLaurin said Jaden Daniels came up to him and asked him, "Hey, man, what do you want to run?" They're forming a connection. You can clearly see it. Basically, since week three, they're starting to really get things rolling, that duo. Let's hear from Terry McLaurin on that second touchdown in Baltimore.
Yeah, it's definitely growing between him and I. And coming out of the huddle on that play, he just asked me, "What route do I want?" And I was like, "All right." So I kind of thought about it. And right before that, I think we had like a timeout. And the way he was playing, I liked a slant. But coming out of that, of the huddle, I was like, if he's on a heavy inside leverage, we've already talked about this back in camp, but if I don't necessarily like the look, then we give each other a little signal. And coming off that release, he banked heavy inside, so I went to kind of run the slant, but then I saw how heavy he was inside, and the release allowed me to get back outside and create some separation. And I think obviously the pump was him just trying to feel what I was going to do with my body language. And he threw a really great back shoulder, and so when the DB's in scramble mode like that, it just gives me an opportunity to be able to locate the ball quicker than he can. And I think he put it in a spot to where only I could get it. And then I feel like I excel at the catch point, so I just wanted to be able to make that play. And I think it's just another testament for him and I to be able to stay on the same page. And fourth down, third down, got to have his situations to keep us in the game. That was a really big play.
I love the growth that you're seeing between these two. Now, one thing that I have not wavered on, despite what other people have said on social media, on these airwaves, whatever, Terry McLaurin is a number one receiver. He's a very good wide receiver. Is he in the same tier as Tyreek and those guys? No, but he's still a number one receiver that is really, really good. Now, is he your typical, prototypical guy that you want at the number one? Probably not. He's not 6'5". He's not, you know, he's not maybe the crispest route runner in certain terms. Like, he's not your traditional number one. But in the modern NFL, Justin Jefferson doesn't necessarily fit the typical mold of a number one receiver. And in my opinion, he's the best wide receiver in the NFL. So there are different ways to get it in the modern game. And Terry excels, like he said, at the catch point. It's something he's really good at. It drives me nuts at times that he catches everything with his body. But at the same point, it's also why he's so good at contested catches. PFF will put out, you know, different graphics all the time about Terry McLaurin, and it's always most since X year, whatever amount of time, that Terry McLaurin has the most contested catches. You want to know why? Because he catches everything with his body, and he catches everything. He even had a drop in that game, by the way, the 2 games ago against the Browns. He could have caught another touchdown pass. But I think that Terry is still a really good wide receiver, and you're starting to finally see that connection over the last 4 weeks with Jaden start to grow. And people were freaking out after 2 weeks, saying, "Oh, Terry's fallen off, Terry this, Terry that." And I think a lot of it is because just a couple throws were missed. Jaden is someone that if you watch him, He wasn't throwing with anticipation early in the season. He's done much better recently. That's why I think if you watched week six versus week one, he's night and day different as a quarterback in just 5 weeks of development. He was not throwing with anticipation early on. And so in turn, you know, maybe Terry wasn't creating as much separation. But also at the same point, if he catches that ball to start the second half in the opener and Jaden puts a little bit of a better ball out there, Terry catches it, we're having a totally different conversation because Terry would have gone likely over 100 yards in the season opener. So Terry has been consistent. Terry's been there. Jaden has continued to grow. And I like the fact, too, that Jaden understands now, okay, in a big spot, not that he didn't already understand this, but he's starting to do it on the football field in a big spot. You notice he didn't ask that to Olamide Zaccheaus. You notice he didn't ask that to Noah Brown. I like those guys. But he went to his number one wide receiver and said, what do you like here? And if you notice, it was going to Terry, regardless. He was going to find a way to get his guy the ball and give him a chance. And if Terry makes the play, Terry makes the play. If he doesn't make the play, I'm going to go down, live and throw in the ball to my best wide receiver. And he did that. And you got to appreciate that that connection is starting to grow. And Jaden, like I said, wasn't necessarily throwing with anticipation, and Terry sometimes just needs you to throw the ball to him. Even if he's covered, he's open. Even though he's not the biggest guy, like I said, his contested catch percentage and what he's able to do in that sort of scenario is really next to none in the National Football League, especially for a guy his size. So you just have to throw him the football sometimes and find a way to get it to him. And it's what drove me nuts for so long about him in this offense for years, even at the beginning of this year. Get him the football and let him go to work. And for whatever reason, early in the season and previous years, that wasn't the case. We've seen in the last 4 weeks that he's really started to get more and more involved. And when you hear these sorts of stories where it's a do or die situation, the game is on the line, you know, a play or two goes differently in Baltimore, all of a sudden you're looking at potentially Washington tying that ball game or maybe winning that ball game. They're in that thing. That's why, I feel pretty good about not having a letdown this week against Carolina, and we'll play some audio of that coming up in a little bit, is they don't get too high, they don't get too low. They're very even keeled. They stay the same no matter what. And playing in that game, it wasn't more than it needed to be. It was a football game. It was week six, and they went in there, and they were prepared whether they were playing Baltimore, whether they were playing Kansas City, or whether they were playing the worst team in the National Football League. It didn't matter. They were ready to roll. But I think you're seeing Jaden get more and more comfortable. And when you see some of these layers just start to grow and you hear the way that guys are talking about him and how they feel about him, you know, going back to the Sam Cosmi video where they had him mic'd up and he's, man, that five is special. That five is good. That's what guys are starting to feel. And you're hearing stories now where, you know, Jaden said to do this and Terry saying, you know, Jaden asked me what route I wanted. Those sorts of things. That's an elite quarterback in the making. If not already there. Like, I think it's one of those things, too, where if you just look at the stats and look what he's done and just watch the film and took away the rookie status, and if you just put somebody here that hadn't watched football in a decade plus and had no idea what was going on, knew who no one was, they'd watch Jaden Daniels say, oh, yeah, he's one of the best quarterbacks in the league, bar none. Not just a rookie quarterback, just bar none, he looks elite already. Not just as a rookie. And I think we're holding reservation because, you know, it's only 6 games into his career, but he's already playing at an elite level. And when you hear stories like this, this is stuff you would hear from Tom Brady talking with a receiver saying, hey, what do we like here? What are we going to try and do here? This is stuff you would hear from Peyton, those elite quarterbacks. And I thought it was interesting. I think it was Chad Ochocinco. I saw a clip of him talking about when he got to play in, I think it was in New England. I can't remember where I heard this from, but it might have been somewhere on ESPN this week. But basically saying that, you know, guys that played together for a long time were able to build that connection where they didn't have to run everything that was right on the script exactly how it was supposed to be run because they had an understanding of, okay, against this coverage, I like this route run this way, I'm going to run it this way, put the ball out here, do this. It's just a connection that's built where this is what I think is going to be fun to watch with Devontae Adams going to the Jets now. Adams and Rodgers had a special connection where everyone else, all other 9 people are running a different play, and Adams and Rodgers are just on their own different play, own different planet, doing their own thing. And I think you see this with Kelsey, with Mahomes. They're just kind of doing their own thing. They have a connection. This sort of thing, it's only 6 weeks, so they're not going to be as advanced as some of these other people I named. But this is how you build that connection, where you look at it and say, okay, we got this signal. You heard him basically say, he gave me a signal out to the outside saying, all right, we like this, we like this. That's how you start building that connection where, you know, Cliff Kingsbury can only do so much for you calling the play. At some point, you've got to have the players to make the play. What do they say all the time? It's not the X's and the O's, it's the Jimmys and the Joes. Well, Jaden and Terry made a play on that one. And you can live with that. And I appreciate that. I like the fact, you know, B. Mitch yesterday, I think, said it best. Like, you want guys out on the football field. They're seeing the stuff. They're the ones playing. You know, whatever's called is fine, but they're the ones playing. And when you give a guy freedom to make that sort of a change and make those sorts of plays, that's how you get to a special territory where these players, I mean, this is stuff you're talking for long time down the road. These are the stories you tell. You know, if that's a, you know, that one's kind of probably going to get forgotten in the long run because it comes in a loss. What if that comes in a divisional playoff game? What if that comes in a week 16 game against Dallas? You know, what if that comes in those sorts of scenarios and you're already building that 6 weeks into his rookie season against the Baltimore team? So I think you got to be pretty excited about this connection that's starting to form. Also want to throw some stats at you. We'll do that next because you're starting to see from weeks 1 and 2 where they really weren't on the same page to seeing since that Cincinnati game, Terry's become a big part of the offense, and he's really, really taken off, and Jaden and Terry are forming that special connection. We'll continue talking about this next here on The Fan. We played that audio from Terry talking about how in his second touchdown in Baltimore, Jaden basically said, what do you want to run? Like it was a backyard, schoolyard sort of thing. And you're starting to see that connection form, and just taking a look even at his games over the last couple of weeks, you're starting to see a difference. Weeks 1 and 2, McLaurin had 12 total targets, 6 per game, 8 receptions, 39 yards, 4.8 yards per reception, 4.9 yards per reception. Weeks 3 through 6, 31 targets, just under 8 a game, 21 receptions, 317 yards, and 15.1 yards per reception, and 4 touchdowns. You're just starting to see him get the ball a lot more. And in those games, he's gone for 100, he's gone for 52, he's gone for 112, and he's gone for 53. And you're just, you feel like they're starting to form the connection where they understand, and Jaden's not foreign to the idea of force-feeding the ball to his best players. Just go watch LSU tape from last year. Malik Nabers doesn't get drafted into the top 10 if it isn't for Jaden Daniels throwing him the ball every other play, right? Like, him and Brian Thomas Jr., he was just feeding those guys the football. So it's not like he came in and didn't understand those things, but he's just, as he gets more comfortable, he gets to put his fingerprint more on the offense. And I think you're seeing that. And the crazy part is, this is stuff that you would usually see not in week 6, but in week 16 as a rookie, right? Like, this is stuff that as the season goes on, you'd feel like, okay, you're getting better and you're getting better and you're feeling more and more and more comfortable. Not week 6, though. Not that early on, and yet you're already seeing it. So I think it's just going to continue to grow in that connection with Terry where they're going to be able to, no matter what the matchup is, find a way and get Terry more involved. And you've already seen that. He's been more involved in the game plan. Jaden's going to find ways to get him the football. Cliff is going to continue to find ways to get it to him. And that's the thing for Jaden that I think is really encouraging is he's already playing at a MVP-type level. And every single time you watch him, not to be critical, but you still see places he can improve. Like, I still think he can improve in terms of throwing with anticipation. I think some of those sorts of things he can still work on and sometimes just letting it rip at times. But what you've seen the last couple of weeks, it's hard to be critical of because there's very few decisions that you're going to change. I mean, I forget which half it was. There was a second half. It might have been, I want to say it was a Cincinnati game. You go back and watch like the second half of the Cincinnati game and you watch every single decision he has to make, whether it's an RPO, whether it's which guy he's throwing the football to, whether it's when he's letting go of the football, and you might have changed one decision for the entire second half. He's playing so flawlessly. I'm just intrigued to see how this continues to play as teams continue to understand what Washington is trying to do. How do they adjust, and how does Washington adjust to the adjustment by the defense? But at the same point, Jaden's playing so well, and Jaden's so hard to game plan against and to stop. I don't know how much you can realistically throw at them that, you know, is going to change things for them. I think teams the last couple of weeks have done a good job against Jaden in the run game. But Jaden's still been impressive as a passer. And at some point, the offense is just good. So we'll see if they keep that up this week in Carolina. We'll get back into the football talk at 5 o'clock. I want to do a little to buy or not to buy. Is Washington going to be aggressive at the trade deadline or not? Or should they be aggressive at the trade deadline or not? But a couple of hours ago, I saw Keith Smith from SpotTrack tweet out that the Wizards might be looking to make a move before the season starts just so they can keep Jared Butler on the roster. We'll talk with him next and get his thoughts on who could potentially be on the move for the Wiz next year on The Fan. Welcome back. Overtime on The Fan. The Wizards will kick off their season on Thursday, taking on the Boston Celtics at home to open up the 2024-2025 season. And as such, they're finalizing their roster. And earlier today, I saw that Keith Smith had tweeted out that the Wizards are in trade discussions to move a guaranteed salary and possibly keeping Jared Butler for depth of point guard, which would mean they need to trade or waive somebody. So to talk more about that, we got Keith Smith from SpotTrack joining us on the BetQL guest hotline. Keith, how you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So just what are you hearing about this, and who are some names we should keep an eye out for the Wizards potentially move?
Yeah, so what Washington wants to do is the easy path to get into roster compliance would be to waive Jared Butler. He's on a non-guaranteed contract, but they like him as a player, and they need some extra point guard depth with Malcolm Brogdon being out. So one of the things that has been floated around the league is that they've been calling teams to gauge their interest in some of their players who are on guaranteed contracts. One of the names that's been mentioned prominently is Johnny Davis, the former first-rounder, that they are potentially looking at maybe moving and getting off. I believe it was Jake Fisher reported earlier today that the team will likely not pick up his rookie-scale team option for next season, not this upcoming season. So that factors in as well. Another name that I've also heard that has been discussed is Patrick Baldwin. Both Davis and Baldwin are players who are, you know, more towards the end of the roster type guys. So we're not talking about any of the big name players or any of the guys who are expected to be regular rotation players.
Yeah, and with those guys potentially being moved, is there a market for those guys? Is there a team that you see being interested in them, or is it more so just, you know, ship them off and see what happens? Or are they just going to end up having to waive one of those guys?
Yeah, it's they're not going to get a great return for either one of those players. What teams will look at, they'll wait and say, hey, they're probably just going to waive one of them anyway. And if we are interested then, their teams are not going to be worried about another team claiming them off waivers or anything like that. Also, Washington is not overly motivated to give up much to move off either player either. They're not talking about sending out valuable draft picks or anything like that. So this one is still, you know, very much in play on how this is going to come together. But at this point, you know, we'll see. And one thing, too, that people have been asking all day, this is not something that needs to get done here in the next, what do we got, about 8.5 minutes or so till the waiver deadline today. This, because we're talking about players with guaranteed contracts, this can carry over into the next couple of days. Teams don't have to be in final roster compliance until Monday, at the close of business on Monday, with the season starting Tuesday. So the Wizards have a little bit more time to work with here, assuming that they are planning on one way or another keeping Jared Butler on the roster.
Well, and so you don't think that there's anything in the works for maybe someone that's more so still a bench player, but a little more of a role player? It's probably just going to be a Johnny Davis or a Patrick Baldwin or someone down the depth chart a little bit. You're maybe not looking at someone like a Rashawn Holmes or someone like that that a team would be calling about?
Yeah, I haven't heard anything with those guys. I think Rashawn Holmes, especially the extension he signed, was set up to be a very tradable contract moving forward, because this season's number, while it's guaranteed, next year is minimally guaranteed. So that's a chunk of what Washington is thinking there. But that's a bigger deal down the line. Teams right now aren't looking to make, you know, big trades. And I get it. Carl Anthony Towns only got traded a couple weeks ago and all that. But right now we're talking about kind of filling out the back end of the roster. This is the NBA's equivalent to when on NFL cutdown day, teams kind of cycle through the last 3-4 guys on their roster. With the NBA, because the roster is so much smaller, it's like maybe one guy at the end of the roster. I think bigger trades for Washington, that's going to come in season and then as we move forward closer to the trade deadline.
You mentioned them wanting to keep Jared Butler, talking with Keith Smith from SpotTrack, and that being the reason that they're going to have to move off one of these guys. Is that more so just to do with the Brogdon injury, or is that something where they really like what he's able to do and he's going to garner minutes even when Brogdon comes back?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both in that. I think there is a belief that they like Butler kind of irregardless of who else is available and on the team, but there's definitely a Brogdon component. That injury left them shorthanded at point guard. They're in a spot now where they've got to do some work to kind of get minutes filled at that position. Jordan Poole can obviously handle a lot of minutes there, but they like him kind of in that combo guard type role that he's best in. Bob Carrington's a player that they're very, very high on, but as a rookie, you don't want to overdo it with him too early on and put too much on his plate. So they're really in a spot where I think what you're going to see is Jared Butler be a part of the team almost no matter what, and see what they can kind of get moving forward with him there, because he's a guy who, not that he's a 10-year veteran or anything, but he's at least been around the league for a couple of seasons now, and they feel pretty comfortable what they can do if they need him to play 15, 20 minutes a night early in the season while Brogdon recovers.
Yeah, and you mentioned Bob Carrington. I'm curious your thought on the rookie class and how much we're going to see those guys early. Bob had a impressive summer league, hasn't been necessarily the best in the preseason. Keyshawn George was impressive in the preseason, and even some of what Alex Saar did in the preseason was impressive. How much are we going to see out of those guys early on in the season, do you think?
I think you're definitely going to see Carrington and Saar quite a bit. I think Carrington, we may see even more of him than what we're anticipating, just again with Brogdon being out. I think they are going to need him to play quite a bit right away. I think Alex Saar is going to be a little bit more of a slower ramp up. Not that we're not going to see him play, but I think we'll see him play shorter minutes early. I think that was the idea behind going out and signing and trading for Jonas Valanciunas, because in that spot, what you can do then is let him kind of be the guy who can go out there and protect the rookie a little bit, not exposing him to too much too soon. And then Keyshawn George, I think his spot towards minutes is a little bit more of an uphill fight, but I know the team plans to work him in as well. It's just that wing group is a little crowded because they've got Bilal Coulibaly, Corey Kispert, a couple guys that they're still very high on, in addition to guys like Kyle Kuzma, Jordan Poole as well, playing at those wing spots. So it's going to take a little bit more for him, I think, to crack the regular rotation.
Talking with Keith Smith from SpotTrack, I know that it's just now the beginning of the season, but this team, let's be frank, isn't going to be playing for much. Looking ahead to what could potentially happen down the line, is this the season that the team moves on from a Kuzma or a Jordan Poole or one of these other bigger names? Is that, you think, a good possibility at this trade deadline?
I think it's certainly possible. I think the Wizards are going to continue to keep this thing in the evaluation stage with their roster as a whole. I want to say Will Dawkins used the term, they're still in the deconstruction phase, I think was what he said, or something along those lines, which I think is very fair, and that's the right place to be in. This is, all right, let's keep working. Let's try to see what we're at. I don't think they're married to any one of these guys, as these guys are untouchable. Nobody can go anywhere. I'd say probably the closest on the rosters is the first and second year players, but the veteran players, I think if there's the right deal to be made, they'll certainly move them. Now, they're not going to move, I've seen people say, ship Jordan Poole out with draft picks, just get him off the roster. They're not in a position to do that, and that would not be a smart use of draft capital. Without being rude about it, I've said multiple times, you can lose with Jordan Poole on the roster just as easily as you can lose without him on the roster. There's no reason to give up picks to do that.
Last one here, talking with Keith Smith from SpotTrack. Just looking at the NBA as a whole, the Wizards are going to open their season against the defending champs, Boston Celtics. They're currently the title favorites. Do you feel good about them again? Is that your top team right now going into the season?
Yeah, I think so. It's not by an overwhelming margin or anything like that. There's other teams in the East that can certainly challenge them, New York, Philadelphia, and Milwaukee, though those are going to be very good teams that are going to be there. Cleveland, I think, is on their way up. Indiana, Orlando, they're kind of lurking a little bit as interesting teams behind that top grouping. And then in the West, you know, it's kind of the teams we know, Dallas, Denver, Minnesota, Oklahoma City is going to be there. I think Phoenix is in a better position. But I think the Celtics proved last year, you know, they went out and just dominated last season. I think people kind of lost sight of how historically good this team was. Their scoring margin, I believe, finished fourth highest of all time in the regular season. They went 64-18 in the regular season, and then went 16-3 in the postseason, and just rolled through teams. They rarely played close games, and I know there's the whole, well, they got this easy path to the playoffs, and that's very true, but they still destroyed the teams that were in front of them night after night. So I think they've just put themselves on a little bit of a different level right now, but they're going to be challenged because it's always harder to do it that second time than it is that first time to climb the mountain.
Keith, appreciate the insight, and we'll keep checking out your work and keep us updated on all the Wiz stuff. Appreciate it, Keith.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. There you heard from Keith Smith. Make sure you check him out on Twitter at KeithSmithNBA. Does a fantastic job covering the whole league. He joined us on the BetQL guest hotline. Sports betting has come to Maryland. Don't place that first bet without checking with BetQL. BetQL analyzes every game to find you the most profitable betting opportunities. Get 3 free days of BetQL access by downloading the BetQL app or visiting BetQL.com. And if you want more Wiz content, I'm going to try to cover the Wizards a little bit closer this year, so you can always check me out on Twitter as well, at Toby_Altizer. Crazy that the NBA season is almost here. Tuesday, I believe, is opening night in the NBA. Thursday, the Wiz open the season at Cap 1 against the Boston Celtics, so NBA is right upon us. Let's take a break when we come back. To buy or not to buy? The Commanders, should they be aggressive at the trade deadline? We'll talk about it next.